When I see all this selling, who is buying? Who is buying? It feels to me like it's got to be banks and it could be sovereigns because it's in the spot market and the size of it is just extraordinary. But this cycle has been very, very unique in just the scale, dollar value. Is it a new cycle or is it a super cycle? Is it a four-year cycle or is it a five-year cycle? Gold doesn't move until it wants to move. And when it moves, you should pay attention. It's telling us that the system is bankrupt and we have to move to a new reserve asset. All roads converge to there's going to be more dollars. 200 would be fantastic. I do think it's going to be a positive year. Get bullish because Bitcoin's not going anywhere. It's going to come back like a cockroach. Happy days.
All right.
It's rock and roll.
Sweet. Jack, mate. You're on this show every week at the moment.
I know.
How's it going, man? This is the first one in person,
it
though,
is,
since
yes.
the new pod.
We're talking about what we're going to talk about today. It's like, I don't know, maybe the red candle, the 80,000 might have something to do with it.
Well, the plan was, I was obviously coming down here to do a couple of interviews. I wanted to record a show with you that was like evergreen so we could release it on the first episode of the next year because you started off the podcast, but Bitcoin didn't let us do that.
No, a bit of volatility though. I mean, like, I'll tell you what, how bored was it at 100K, at 110, going sideways, doing nothing? Like, and I've been thinking about this, a lot of hodlers, the 15% down sucks because it's like not enough of a discount where you're like, yeah, okay, now I'll jump in. Once you start talking about like 25, 30, 30 something, everyone's like, okay, now it's like cheap sats, right? Now we're trying to find where that bottom is, but like it just fires up the hodlers again. I mean, I felt myself 100K. I'm like, it's a dip. Like I stack sats up there, but I'm like, now we're at 80. I'm like, let's go.
Oh, this is value. Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is value.
But before we get into that, Alec, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Very good. Super stoked to be here.
You're the man behind the scenes at Check on Chain.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
Introduce yourself.
Wow. Well, I'm Alec. I'm co-founder of Check on Chain and been working with James for about 4 or 5 years now. We started at Glassnode together, actually. So I was like the first marketing hire at Glassnode. We were trying to build some stuff over there. And then we decided, you know what? It's time to do our own thing, bring back to home soil, come to Australia and kick off Check on Chain.
What's with the Aussie contingent at Glassnode? Is that just-
We were the Aussie contingent.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, we were it. So I think I was employee number 8. You would have been like 12 or 13 or something.
Something like that.
But Alec and I, we've known each other our whole lives.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, since we were like 3 years old.
Preschool buddies.
Yeah, yeah. It goes back a long way. And then we worked together because, you know, I was a civil engineer working at a data company, sending marketing emails. Like, I mean, it's horrific. So I was like, I just need help. We were living together at the time. And I said, can you give me a hand with these things? Sending emails and all the rest of it. And next thing you know, we've got a marketing hire and lived in Mexico for what, 9 months after the pandemic, kind of building out all the different products and things there. And by the time we got to 2023, I was like, you know, it's time to set our own sail. And Check on Chain was always something I wanted to do, but it's really that challenge of like, let's start the business, you know, start from zero. You got to find subscribers, you got to keep them, right? You got to actually give people value. And we spent a lot of time designing what the product was going to look like. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got to give people something that's worthwhile reading and watching and, you know, value their time. And I'm also a big fan of valuing our time, right? So everything we do is paywalled because it's, you know, I value my time, you value Alec's time. And our customers, we value their time as well. So it's part of the mission.
And we've got some exciting stuff coming up. I consider myself like an on-chain Padawan, kind of. I've been able to sit with Check. I mean, I moved in the pandemic. We had nothing to do. We couldn't go outside. So I'm just soaking up all this on-chain information. And yeah, just over time, over osmosis, I'm kind of getting used to all these charts. I consider myself kind of like a pleb hodler, if you can think of that way. But yeah, I love helping and teaching and making sure hodlers are coming along on this journey and like just getting that data-driven side of the market is super important. Like getting off the price chart specifically and getting off X and just seeing all these crazy M2 charts. And by the way, which
drives you mad.
yeah, the data-based approach with Bitcoin's like beautiful blockchain is just so fascinating. So yeah, we're also building an exciting new project, which a bunch of people are going to be pretty happy to see coming out, a new charting platform.
Long time coming.
Yeah.
Right now, so the charting platform we had, I started building that in 2019, and that was actually my excuse to learn Python. So back then, I'm a civil engineer, and what do civil engineers do? They use spreadsheets for everything. So I would download, I think Coinmetrics had the very first like on-chain data set. I download that, plug it into my spreadsheet, all the charts would update once a day. And I was like, I've just can't do this anymore. There's got to be a better way. So I taught myself Python. Check on Chain, the software, it's like 150,000 lines now that runs every
day. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot of code. There's a lot of duct tape and a lot of zip ties in there, but I know where they are. It's basically pulling all your different on-chain futures, options. And that's what I love about, I think a lot of people know me as like an on-chain analyst, but I consider myself a Bitcoin analyst because we've got all these different market sectors. And more often than not, the ETFs tell the same story as the on-chain DAO, which tells the same story as the futures. They just have a different way of displaying it. But anyway, that software, I mean, it's literally the charting platform right now is a handwritten piece of HTML that I wrote many years ago. It's real, it's real basic, but it's a journey to try and get it.
I remember when we used to hang out when we were much younger and we played Counter-Strike. Like the Counter-Strike 1.6, which is like an FPS shooter, if you're not aware. And he was coding up bots and like customizing in the console and doing all this wild coding stuff back then and like making all the custom maps for us. So like I can really see he's basically
All that was just training.
Yeah. And now it's a giant code base of a million lines.
You don't leave university. And that's the other thing. I paid off my student debt for my engineering degree on the day that I quit to go and work at Glassnode. So that was it's kind of like a nice way to wrap it up. So it got me through my first 10 years of work experience. I consider myself a Bitcoin analyst now. So it's one of those fascinating, you don't set out to be a Bitcoin analyst. You don't even know that Bitcoin exists.
You don't set out to be a Bitcoin podcaster.
You don't set out to be a Bitcoin podcaster. It's just one of those things where it pulls me back in, right? Yeah. Sucks you back into the industry and you just can't leave.
Honestly, one of the things I find most fascinating is when you meet people who have found out about Bitcoin, they know in a little bit and then they can just go on about their life like nothing changed.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand how that mindset exists.
What's the line? Is it nobody's a Bitcoin critic once you understand the difficulty adjustment.
Yeah.
Once that part clicks. And the other one, have you seen the Matthew McConaughey scale? Like the grid of nine Matthew McConaughey?
Is this where he's like smoking on one of them?
No. It kind of goes like he's really green. He's coming in. He's like looking all happy. He's got his cigar like before the bear market hits. And then as you go down, you go through the bear and he's crying. And then by the time you get to six, panel six is where he's standing there with a shotgun, right? Standing out there. Like,
I am number six,
like Wild West.
Sure.
But I was number six. That was like my 2019, 2021 era. I don't think you ever leave six. You always revert back to six. I feel like I'm a six right now. So I gradually get up into like a seven and an eight. No one gets to a nine. Like nines, you live on a boat and all the rest of it. You get hauled back to a six when you, especially on drawdowns, because you're like, I'm not crying because I know what this bear happens, right? Bears go down. The market's going to recover. Bitcoin's going to be fine. But you get that like hardcore cold card wielding, like Bitcoin. I'm holding my ground. I'm standing on the floor. You know, keep stacking set. Stay humble.
It's funny when stuff like this happens, I love it.
That's great.
I don't want to see anyone getting wrecked and all that stuff. And that is obviously happening right now because people are taking leverage or whatever. But I love it. It's like, this is the stuff that makes you feel alive. But it's weird because this year, like we did the first show on the New What Bitcoin Did was with you. We recorded it twice because the first time we recorded it, it was like 95K and then it went over 100K. I was like, dude, we've got to do it again. I don't think if you asked many Bitcoiners then, if we would be at a lower price in 12 months time, they'd have said yes. This year has been really strange, I think.
Agree.
It's not really gone up much. Now we're entering this period where who knows if this is just a dip or if we're going into a bear market, what that's going to look like. But has this year surprised you?
It has. Oh, I mean, it has. And I think the back half definitely surprises. However, I think the story of where we are right now has unfolded progressively. Mm-hmm. So if I was to really just like recap this cycle, let's call it, 2023, I would broadly just say was the recovery from the bear. There's rumors that start to come in about the ETFs, but like there was a lot of PTSD. That was the recovery of PTSD phase. 2024, ETFs go live, we get the pump to 73K, and then we had the first period of chop solidation, which a lot of people were calling for a bear market there too.
Mm-hmm.
And just for a bit of context, the 2024 chop, the tariff tantrum, and right now, all very, very similar. All very, very similar in their structure. This particular dip is the angriest of them now, but back at 95K, and we'll talk a lot about 95 shortly, at 95K looks exactly like all the other dips. Like that level was where it actually looks just the same as a dip. Now this chop solidation thing, this sideways grind is obviously new. 2025 going sideways, in my view, there's three core pillars that I think have really driven this market cycle. And we were talking before about how data gives you just like, you look at all the Twitter narratives, and you just don't see it happening in the data. How many people have seen people talking about OG selling in the last like 3 weeks? Mm-hmm. I've been writing about it for 6 months because and that's not because I'm overly pressing, it's because literally you can see the amount of sell side that's going on. So the three pillars, ETFs, massive, big demand vector, in my opinion, just orders of magnitude more important than treasury companies in terms of the actual demand. And they're more like a passive bid. They've just been consistently buying. And honestly, we're seeing outflows. The outflows we've seen in this entire correction is about $3 billion. That's been one day of hodler sell side in recent weeks. So hodler sell side, and people can argue and debate and say, oh, long-term holders, not really 6 months, and they're not an OG if it's only 5 years. Drop the terminology. Somebody had an opportunity cost of 6 months where they could have bought NVIDIA. They could have bought literally anything else. They held the coin for 6 months. And the beautiful thing about the six-month period, ignore the fact that they're a long-term holder. Whatever your precondition of like, is it really long-term? They gave up 6 months of opportunity cost, mm-hmm. and that naturally filters out the guy who bought yesterday and sold today, which is kind of just daily chop. You don't really care that someone bought yesterday and capitulated today. What you care about is someone who bought and is now selling later on. So the second pillar is that hodler sell side. It's been absolutely enormous and has been accelerating. It continues to accelerate. We're talking about billions of dollars a day in these revived coins. Now, not every single one of those coins is sold, but a lot of them are. You know, like a lot of them are. So you've got to just look at it from that perspective. And whenever you see revived supply ticking higher, the market is usually rallying and then peaks and then slows down and then backs off. So, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say there's a lot of old coins going back to market and the market stopped going up.
If you already self-custody your Bitcoin, you know the deal with hardware wallets. Complex setups, clumsy interfaces, and a seed phrase that can be lost, stolen, or forgotten. Well, BitKey fixes that. BitKey is a multi-sig hardware wallet built by the team behind Square and Cash App. It packs a cryptographic recovery system and built-in inheritance feature into an intuitive, easy-to-use wallet with no seed phrase to sweat over. It's simple, secure self-custody without the stress. And Time named BitKey one of the best inventions of 2024. Get 20% off at bitkey.world when you use the code WBD. That's BITKEY.world and use the code WBD. This episode is brought to you by AnchorWatch. The thing that keeps me up at night is the idea of a critical error with my Bitcoin cold storage. And this is where AnchorWatch comes in. With AnchorWatch, your Bitcoin is insured with your own A-plus rated Lloyd's of London insurance policy, and all Bitcoin is held in their time-locked multi-sig vaults. So you have the peace of mind knowing your Bitcoin is insured while not giving up custody. So whether you're worried about inheritance planning, rent tax, natural disasters, or just your own silly mistakes, you're protected by AnchorWatch. Rates for fully insured custody start as low as 0.55% and are available for individual and commercial customers located in the US. Speak to AnchorWatch for a quote, and for more details about your security options and coverage, visit anchorwatch.com today. That is anchorwatch.com. Do you wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Well, Ledger makes that possible. They're the global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, and since 2018, they've issued over $9 billion in loans with a perfect record of protecting client assets. With Ledin, you get full custody loans with no credit checks or monthly repayments, just easy access to dollars without selling a single sat. As of July 1st, Ledin is Bitcoin only, meaning they exclusively offer Bitcoin-backed loans with all collateral held by Ledin directly or their funding partners. Your Bitcoin is never lent out to generate interest. I recently took out a loan with Ledin. The whole process was super easy. The application took me less than 15 minutes, and in a few hours, I had the dollars in my account. It was really smooth. So if you need cash but you don't want to sell Bitcoin, head over to ledin.io/WBD and you'll get 0.25% off your first loan. That's ledin.io/WBD. So I want to get into like what's happening now and what you think the next few months will look like. But if we just go back to when we first recorded the show nearly a year ago, just past 100K, has this been a bull market?
Good question. So I've been calling it more recently, to be fair, the Great Rotation. I think Jordy Visser actually had a really good piece, which captures like the zeitgeist of it. Now, I don't know if it's 100% accurate, but I do think that essence of like the existing holder base rotating out, and this is the story that I think people really want to capture. So let me just quickly, before I forget, the three pillars I think change this market: ETFs, the hodler sell side, and the IBIT options, which is going to move forward, be a massive, massive factor. But going back to the Great Rotation, huge amounts of coins being sold. Now, we did not see those show up as demand in the ETFs, not even close. When you compare the amount of sell side pressure, profit taking, no matter how you want to frame it up, the ETFs typically are 20 to 30%. So we're missing the other five, you know, there's five times more stuff happening in the spot market. Same for Saylor. When you hear these narratives of Saylor has cornered the market and he's the only one who's captured all the ETFs have captured Bitcoin, they're kind of forgetting that the existing spot markets are still out there and they're still the dominant factor in what's going on. Now, obviously derivatives and stuff are a layer on top of that, but when I see all this selling and we went sideways for 12 months, so 2025 has been a sideways grind up until very recently, who is buying? Who is buying? Mm-hmm. This is the thing. It's an unanswered question at this point in time. I'm dissatisfied with the answer, but I like Jordy Fisher's idea of like this great rotation or this IPO moment. I've been calling it the great rotation. All hands getting out. No question. It's been massive. Mm-hmm. $110 billion in 24 and 25 combined from five-year-old plus coins. You know, you don't move a five-year-old coin unless you mean it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you don't just go moving it around because you want to. There's a rhyme and reason to it. Who are the buyers? Because it's not happening in the ETFs. So it's not some hedge fund. It's not some like random entity. It's spot. Mm. So the fact that we went sideways under tens of billions, I mean, you could argue, and I'll talk about today at the conference, like hundreds of billions of dollars worth of sell side this year in spot markets, and the price went sideways until very recently. Who's buying? That's the really interesting question that I don't have an answer for, but it's fascinating to think about.
Just for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what the Jordy Visser piece was, basically he called this Bitcoin's IPO moment, and he sort of draws a parallel to traditional markets where people take an early stake in a company, they're taking high risk, and the IPO moment when they've gone through all the pain to get there, go public, like these are now publicly traded shares, that's their opportunity to see liquidity for the first real time. And so what happens is a load of those early investors will dump their shares. Who knows? You normally get an IPO pump and then
yep.
Price comes down. And he says that this is happening now in Bitcoin because for the first time, if you bought Bitcoin in 2010, 2011, like you're sat on hundreds of millions or billions of dollars.
In a legacy wallet somewhere.
Yeah. And like this is the first time you actually have the liquidity to get out with the ETFs and all the treasury companies and whoever else who's totally on the other side of that trade. I like that framing. I don't know if it's correct, but I think it's interesting.
The other thing to think about is like, imagine selling. We saw that dude who offloaded 80,000 Bitcoin held from like 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine offloading $10 billion worth of Bitcoin in the previous US administration? You'd have the feds up your ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you'd have your bank account shut down. So for the first time, the regulatory environment, there's the price, there's the demand, there's the liquidity, and there's just, you're not going to get taken out the back by the government. So I think there's a lot of elements here, which it kind of makes sense. And that's why I'm saying I think it captures the zeitgeist of what's going on.
Yeah.
It may not be perfectly correct, but we always have to use simplified models to understand the world. And I think it's actually a very valid way to think about it. It makes sense from just a narrative perspective.
And importantly, he calls this like a sign of success, not failure. Like totally. This is a good thing that this is happening. Like there's also the idea that this is moving funds from being like concentrated in a number of like massive whales to being in everyone's hands, which is again good for Bitcoin. But I think, does he say that he expects this to last somewhere between 6 and 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell how long this whole process lasts. I mean, to be fair, this rotation, like the majority of the selling has occurred really within the last like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, and a lot of it was above 120K. If we look at, we use metrics like realized profit, which shows the delta between when a coin was acquired and when it was disposed of. We saw, you know, again, billions of dollars a day in realized profit. And this is the other thing you can see, coin day destruction, lots of old coins coming back to life, revived supply, the volume of them, how much profit they're locking in. All of these things were like record highs in the March pump in 2024, in November, December, January, when the kind of called the Trump pump. And then this has been a very sustained period of the back half of 2025, just tons and tons of sell side and ramping up. But what we're now seeing is the folks who are selling, there's a lot of people who are like 6 months to a year. Those guys are people who wish they had a bought Nvidia. They mm-hmm. gave up the opportunity cost. They held Bitcoin. The momentum went nowhere. There, a lot of those guys are now selling and taking a loss, crystallizing a loss. And this is probably, if there's one thing I can just help people understand right now, 70% of all of the wealth that's ever been invested in Bitcoin, if we price every UTXO based on when it last moved, 70% has a cost basis above 85K.
That's insane.
70%. Mm. this is Bitcoin's new home.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're talking about 30K and 10K and 5K Bitcoin, the truth is it's like ancient history. It just doesn't matter. There's not enough wealth down there. The wealth is all up here. Now, because we're below it, that's a lot of potential sellers on the way back up. So the bulls have got a lot of work to do to get us out of this mess. However, the rotation of this capital, think about who these new buyers are, right? These aren't retail hodlers putting in their pocket money. You know, no one's got these kind of deep pockets. We're talking, there has to be, could be banks, could be sovereigns, could be a bit of everything. I saw the other day, I forget which Gulf state, but there's a Gulf state that bought like $500 million worth of the ETF. So like sovereigns are interested in this kind of thing. And these folks feel like price insensitive buyers.
Yeah.
Where they just accumulate and they're just forever allocators. So there is going to be this rotation. Markets have got to go through this process. It'll take time to hammer out this bottom. But at the same time, these guys probably aren't. You know, they're sailor types. They're not going to sell.
Yeah.
So there's going to be this process of, you know, as we hammer out a floor, wherever we find that clearing price, you know, Bitcoin's got a really bright future ahead of it.
In terms of revived supply, so what's the average age of coins being sold right now from the long-term holder cohort? Because when we studied this data, like long-term holder sell side has been incredible this cycle. Like nothing like it. We've never seen something like this. But a lot of it's from younger long-term holder coins, which kind of can be a little confusing, but it basically means 1 year plus held Bitcoin. They're all kind of just, get me out.
Yeah.
That's the kind of vibe with that
cohort. So the way to think about it, and Glassnode actually ran a really good study, I think maybe last year, called Time is Money. And they basically showed that there is a very clear power law relationship. It's a beautiful power, the perfect power law relationship between the probability of a coin or a UTXO being spent on any one day and how long it's been held. So in other words, that means most of the coins, like 90% of them that move on any one day, moved yesterday or the day before. The vast majority of on-chain volume moved recently. The older a coin is, the less likely it's to be spent. But once you get to about 5 months, you know, what's the difference between a probability of 0.01% and 0.0001%? In practical terms, nothing. Mm-hmm. It's the same probability. It's a very, very unlikely. So 5 months is where they get to the point where for practical purposes, we can just consider them to be a long-term holder. But within that long-term holder set, they're very different to the short-term holders in their overall behavior. But you're right, the 6 months old long-term holders are more active than the 1 year, and the 1 year is more active than the 2 years in a power law relationship. So, and another fun fact is that the on-chain volume, if you break up what the size of a per transaction is, the average transaction right now is moving $1 million plus. 75% of on-chain volume is moving $1 million plus. All-time high of that ratio. So institutional capital is what's moving around on-chain. And you asked before, what's the average age of things? The baseline through most market cycles is the average coin that moves is 30 days old. On average, the average spent coin is 30 days. This cycle has been an almost linear uptrend and we're now at about 100 days. So that's more than, you know, three times as big as what your average is over any other previous cycle. So it always spikes in bulls because old money takes profits. But this cycle has been very, very unique in just the size, scale, dollar value, coin day destruction. There's a metric we use called liveliness, which shows all the coin days that have ever been destroyed and all the coin days that have ever been created. Dave Pule and I, when we wrote Coin Time Economics, we kind of described that since 2017, the 2017 bull was actually where the most coins came back to life. And a lot of them were because of the Bitcoin Cash hard fork.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to move coins to a new wallet, take advantage of the dividend. We've just broken to new all-time highs in liveliness, which means—
I guess people were getting them off exchanges then as well, so they could have the—
all sorts of things. So there's just a lot of activity. And the thing with liveliness, it helps you understand how many coins are not lost, right? Because if a coin has been spent, it might be, you might move it to your wallet and then immediately lose the keys.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to know that until 10 years down the road when it still hasn't moved and the probabilities increase that it's lost. When coins come back to life and liveliness, it's just punched a new all-time high, which is honestly something I didn't expect to happen. I thought it was going to be range bound for a long time. We have seen just an old coin transfer that is, it's unprecedented. The only other time you can put anything similar is the 2017 bull, and a lot of that was the Bitcoin Cash hard fork.
Yeah, and in terms of bull market correction drawdowns, we have a chart that compares all of the drawdowns in the current bull market, if we still think it's a bull market. Right now, we're down 30%, I believe. That happened in the tariff tantrum back in April when Trump announced his, with that big, huge board of crazy tariffs and everything new.
A tariff for penguins.
Yeah.
Is this not more than 30% now?
35 is the deepest that we got. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's similar to the tariff tantrum, but we were under 100K at that point, right? I think the 100K, yes, having six figures is a very key like psychological level for a lot of human beings just looking at the price. So people who got in a year ago at 100K, because we're basically we're down on the year now, like that, they held for a whole year and they got invalidated. They saw AI just ripping.
And missed everything.
The they missed cost. All of that. The government's very, very kind to AI. You can see like the Trump administration is very, it helps AI pump right now. They're doing whatever they can to like make sure regulation's lower. The smart money just go, I'm just going to rotate into AI. Why wouldn't I? Like Bitcoin just didn't do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The AI is going through a generational run. Like why wouldn't the smart money, this is my perspective anyway, the smart money should rotate into something that is more of a guarantee. And that's kind of, to me, it's kind of simple almost why Bitcoin's a bit weak right now. It's just because there's a more, I don't know, people lusting over AI, and it's just a better trade right now.
Well, I mean, the world's a relative place. Capital markets, money will move where it's treated best. Market doesn't go anywhere. Seriously. That's why you can see these 6 months, guys. They're momentum traders. But also, Bitcoin will find a floor. Mm-hmm. We all know it will find a floor. We were talking about this before. Shitcoins, the problem with shitcoins is that you don't know if they will ever find a floor. You don't know if they're ever going to come back. Bitcoin, you know, will find a floor and will start moving. And that momentum money will come ripping right back.
Right
in.
Back,
so, you know, for me as a hodler, that's why 15% down, you're like, okay, but once it's like 30%, you're like, oh, maybe I should start driving Ubers as well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you start thinking for other ways. You can, maybe I can delay that bill. Maybe I can sort this. You start getting hungry for the sats again. So once that market finds a bottom and starts moving, well, the momentum money is going to come roaring back in, because the same reason I started buying Bitcoin in 2019, when like it finally dawned on me that, hey, the governments are bankrupt and they're going to have to print money to solve it. We were talking about it this morning over breakfast. When you play forward, whether it's AI is deflationary or if it's inflationary, or I don't know which way you go, they're either going to have to pump the market because it wants to collapse, because we're seeing the popping of a bubble, or they're going to have to UBI because it's displaced everyone. Yeah. So pick your poison. All roads converge to there's going to be more dollars and there's going to be 21 million Bitcoin. There's 5% left to mine. It's going to take 110 years or 130 years to finally mine them all.
All roads lead back to Bitcoin.
All roads lead back to Bitcoin. Stack sats.
One of the interesting things, and I think this is because we didn't have a bull market that almost anyone expected, is sentiment is absolutely shot right
but
now.
It was shot 10% below the all-time high.
Mm.
It was shot so quickly. This has been a really interesting dynamic, is watching how flaky sentiment has been. Now, I don't really have a good reason for
that. I think it's because we didn't have a bull run, like not at least not one comparable to previous bull runs.
Yes, and I heard Lynn say this in your pod, and I've been saying it for a long time. Expectations not meeting reality. Massive, massive reason, because people had the green, and the last green was the big green.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually look at the average monthly performance, I've run this for like the whole of Bitcoin's history. I've run it for just from 2015 onwards, from 2020 onwards, from 2023 onwards. And the pattern is very similar. September is the only month where on average it's shit and every other month is pretty good. And then the last part of the year is the best. This year, every single month has been out of consensus. September was a good month. November's been terrible. October's been terrible.
Yeah.
So like it's just been a different year, but expectations not meeting reality, I think, is a big part of it.
The other thing is like no one cares about who wins the bronze medal, essentially. And we've had gold tearing, ripping, and we've had the AI. So Bitcoin's kind of like had bronze medal this year. And comparison is the thief of joy.
Totally.
Is a quote I love. And basically all Bitcoiners have been doing, especially on X, is comparing to things that have outrun Bitcoin, which just makes everyone so sad. Like there's no way to, even though Bitcoin ripped to 125, but everyone should be joyous. It's like goes down a little bit and then, but gold, but AI, oh, this sucks. Like immediately, especially humans, just like getting that third bronze medal is just never a good thing.
It was so funny watching Bitcoiners become gold bugs when gold went on its run.
Yeah.
And like gold is the other, like I have 90% Bitcoin, 10% gold. That's my portfolio. And I sleep very well at night. And I actually heard Luke Gromit, I can't remember when he said it, but he said it some time back. Someone asked him, what's his like non-consensus opinion? And he goes that gold's going to have a period of time where it outperforms Bitcoin. And that's stuck with me for a long time. And like the reason I have gold is like, it's almost like a ballast in my portfolio where it's the same trade. It's just not as volatile. I can tap it when I want it. And also I just sometimes want something that's not going to rip, go down from 125 to 80. That's where it sits, like a ballast part of my portfolio. And in fact, I always try to get gold to 10%, but as we know, Bitcoin runs too hard. So I'm always chasing. I literally have to continue to buy gold to get it to 10%. We might have finally hit it now at Bitcoin.
I think the interesting thing about Luke, like Luke's clearly a genius. Like I love talking to him. I get his newsletter. I don't think there's really very many people that are better than him at doing what he does. But in the one of his recent newsletters, he basically said, you need to start trimming Bitcoin. I think he might have even said time to get out of Bitcoin. Do you think the fact that the bull market was obviously completely different, if it even was a bull market, mm-hmm. the bear market is going to be completely different. Do you think if you're selling now on cycle expectations, that's a mistake?
That's my view. So there's no reason that the four-year cycle has to play out. A lot of people are going to say that it has played out, but we are down 35%. Mm-hmm. My base case for now is, and I've been saying this for a long time, there's a model called the true market mean, which is 82K, which we tagged overnight. So the true market mean, again, Dave Puhle and I built this in CoinTime Economics. There's a model called the realized price, which is the average on-chain cost basis per Bitcoin. But the problem with the realized price, we've actually traded below it way back in 2015, way back in 2018. Like it's always been, we trade below it and that's when bottom formation really starts. I was of the view that we shouldn't actually have hit it in 2022. And the reason why, Satoshi, Lost Coins, early miners, they're sitting on tremendous unrealized profits, but they're not going to take them because they're lost. All right, put the quantum threat aside as a potential for bringing back to life. Those coins are not going to come back to market in just normal participants. So in order to hit the break-even level of the realized price, you need, let's say Satoshi's up $25 billion. People who are active in the cycle need to be holding $25 billion of losses to offset it, to get to break even. Mm-hmm. So the bigger that the higher the price goes, the larger the market gets, the more those unrealized profits swell, which means the larger the damage has to be for people who are active. And what happens when people go underwater? They sell, they capitulate out. And those losses actually get kind of tempered because people respond to the sell-off. So the true market mean uses liveliness, and I won't go into all the details, but it basically zones in on active investors, the older coins that haven't moved and have just huge amounts of coin days within them. We start to discount them the more that they have. And from that perspective, that's like the average cost basis for active investors. And it's, statistically speaking, the price oscillates around this thing. It is the middle, statistically speaking, of the entire Bitcoin market. It's at 82K. You know what else is at 82K? The average inflow cost basis for the ETFs. Saylor, who I would say is, broadly speaking, the average dude in terms of like they buy all the time in a bull. Mm-hmm. His cost basis is at 74, which is not too far from 82. And the reason it's there is because they've been struggling to buy more coins, which if there's one challenge I'd give to Saylor, it's like you need a bear market strategy here because these coins are cheap. And for me as a hodler, I'm happy as Larry, right? I'm going to keep buying down here. But the average hodler is about 82K. The average ETF investor is 82K. That also tells you that the ETFs are also kind of the average market participant. The average market participant is around 82K. If we were to bottom there, it was at 30K back in the previous cycle. What did it take to get us below that level? Because we bottomed there in like mid-2021, then we bounced off it. We came back down to it. We needed Luna to market sell 80,000 Bitcoin in distress. We needed Three Arrows Capital to be a fraud. We needed Genesis and Celsius and then finally FTX. That's the kind of damage we needed to get below down to the realized price. So I actually lost a $100 bet with my colleague from Glassnode because I was like, I don't think from first principles, I don't think we get to the realized price. I didn't know all that fraud was there. Mm-hmm. And that $100 is worth a whole lot more now with Bitcoin with it. But for now, unless Saylor implodes, I'm not sure where that GFC grade deleveraging comes from that could take us down to the realized price of 56.
Yeah.
Could it happen? Yes. It's not my base case. So my base case for now is that we probably hammer out a bottom somewhere, like we might tag the 70s. I think getting down to the 50s is, you know, Bitcoin's a $1 trillion asset now. If you know 50K, it's, you're almost undoing the ETF. So like, can it happen? Anything can happen. Is it my base case? No.
This episode is brought to you by River, and they've just launched a very cool new product where you can automatically buy every price dip. Their zero fee recurring buys are a proven way to build wealth with Bitcoin, and you can now supercharge them and buy up to 100% more Bitcoin if the price is dipping at the time of your order. It's a great tool to buy more Bitcoin at lower prices, and while your cash is waiting to be deployed, you earn 3.75% interest on it paid in Bitcoin.
River is built to last with security at its core and is the only Bitcoin exchange in the US with proof of reserves. To open an account, go to river.com/WBD and earn up to $100 in Bitcoin when you buy. That's river.com/WBD. What Bitcoin Did is brought to you by the massive legends Iron, the largest NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin miner using 100% renewable energy. Iron are not just powering the Bitcoin network, they're also providing cutting-edge computing resources for AI, all backed by renewable energy. We've been working with their founders, Dan and Will, for quite some time now and have been really impressed with their values, especially their commitment to local communities and sustainable computing power. So whether you're interested in mining Bitcoin or harnessing AI compute power, Iron is setting the standard. Visit iron.com to learn more, which is iren.com. What if you could lower your tax bill and stack Bitcoin at the same time? Well, by mining Bitcoin with Blockware, you can. New tax guidelines from the Big Beautiful Bill allow American miners to write off 100% of the cost of their mining hardware in a single tax year. That's right, 100% write-off. So if you have $100,000 in capital gains or income, you can purchase $100,000 of miners and offset it entirely. Blockware's mining as a service enables you to start mining Bitcoin right now without lifting a finger. Blockware handles everything from securing the miners to sourcing low-cost power to configuring the pool. They do it all. You get to stack Bitcoin at a discount every single day while also saving big come tax season. Get started today by going to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/WBD. Of course, none of this is tax advice. Speak to your accountant or tax advisor to understand how these rules apply to you. And then head over to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/WBD and you'll get 1 week of free hosting and electricity with each hosted miner purchased. This episode is brought to you by Bitcoin Mina. On December 8th and 9th, I'll be in Abu Dhabi for Bitcoin Mina along with 10,000 other Bitcoiners. There's an amazing lineup of over 200 speakers sharing Bitcoin insights and innovation from all over the world. And if you're looking for the ultimate VIP experience with exclusive networking plus premium food and drink, then grab the Whale Pass. And the Whale Night Party even includes surfing, so you know I'm going to be there. Tickets are on sale now. Use code WBD to get 10% off at checkout on all pass types. The website is mina.b.tc and use code WBD for 10% off.
I think in a lot of ways, the market's far more healthy than it was back in 2022. Like, I can't think of, besides some treasury companies imploding, anything that could do that. I don't think there's any...
I can't see.
I mean, touch wood. I don't think there's any like fraudulent businesses in Bitcoin at the moment. Like, it seems like everyone's learned their lesson from 2022.
And if we have a bear market, let's just say for argument's sake, we bottom at the true market mean, 82K. If we bottom at the true market mean, it's 35%. Is everyone going to reset their cycle chart at the same way that they did FTX, at the same way that they did, and this has been my case for a long time, I think the bull isn't going to be that, like, we didn't have a blow off, but generally speaking, the bull market did exactly what a bull market does. Price go up, old hands sell. It's what, how they use things generally play out. My view was always that the bear was going to break people because they're not going to know when to reset their chart.
Yeah.
And if we bottom at 35% down and in 6 months time, we're toying with all time high, is it a new cycle or is it a super cycle? Is it a 4 year cycle or is it a 5 year cycle? You know, and again, this is all speculation, but I just wonder if you have to be so flexible in your thinking moving forward. You've probably seen people sharing, there's like a big table of all the metrics that didn't hit 0 out of 30 hit their on-chain top. And it's like, yeah, but that doesn't really matter because there was a tremendous amount of sell side. When we started talking, and I think it was about 113K, I wrote a piece called On the Cusp. And On the Cusp is where I sold my MSTR at $300. And I said, I think, check the analyst who's supposed to be very objective, said something doesn't smell right here. We're below the short-term cost basis. We've failed 2 all-time high attempts. Something's wrong. I'm selling my risk position because I want cash for the road down. And I started highlighting, and we were talking about it before that, 95K. 95K is where we got about 60% of all the money underwater. And I said, look, the road from 115, we're down around the first line of defense. 100K is the next line of defense. Once you get down to 95, we're really testing the waters, and the trip from there to the 80s will be swift. So we've kind of watched this thing devolve over time. And again, no one can predict the future, but what we can see is where is everyone's cost basis? Mm-hmm. And just drawing that line in the sand and saying, and I called it the bull's last stand. And when we got to 95, what happened? Straight to 82. And that's not because I can predict the future. That's just because there's a lot of people suddenly underwater. We can see all of their cost base and you go, it's a sensitive spot. It's where people's sentiment is going to shift to, oh shit, we might have just flipped over and I could be late to this party now.
So what's the check on chain take now? Is it that we're going to hammer out a bottom basically where we are, or do you think we go lower?
Yeah, so my base case for now, there's two elements. One, I do think, so for the longest time, I think in 2024, I wrote the true market mean, wherever that was at the time, 40K or 30K or something. I said, I wrote a piece called Rethinking Bears. And I said, at some point when the bear shows up, here's the fundamental reason why I think the true market mean is more likely, which I was describing before, more likely to be that floor level. It's at 82 now. That doesn't mean that we bottom at 82, but that's kind of the realized price. I think we chop around it. It's kind of a center of gravity. I think the ETFs being there is also a very good confluence. We also have, unfortunately, in the very, very near term, so probably by the time people are listening to this, we've probably already seen this, there's a ton of people longing the bottom with futures on leverage. So what I suspect happens is we probably get a wick. We probably tagged seven something, but I do think that gets bought up. So I would be very surprised if we go down too far below the 2024 chop zone. My base case, and again, we can only work in scenarios. My base case is that 2024 chop, you know, 70 plus, I think that's going to work as support. I mean, you're going to give me coins at 70K. I'll think about this in the shower this morning. If price goes down to 50K, you can now with a 5K slug buy 0.1 corn.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, but when you're
going to give me $5,000 and I could buy 0.1 corn, suddenly people can start being whole coiners again. I'm sorry, it's too cheap. It just doesn't make sense. There's too many people like me. I'm going to step in before that. So my base case is somewhere between what we've tagged 80, could be the low, probably get retested because of futures, but this zone, this air gap between, you know, 70 to 80, I suspect we'll find a base somewhere in there. That would be my base case.
Yeah, I would take that all day, every day.
It's too cheap otherwise.
Have you guys been following this Wintermute Binance thing?
No, I'm sure there's bodies out there, but you know, this is the thing. Everyone goes looking for a boogeyman. You know, from my perspective, we broke below the base of what I call the hodler's wall, where all that supply is. Bunch of people are now scared that they bought the top. They start responding. There's no support between there and 85.
So you don't think it's down to these market makers? So the just for anyone listening who's not aware, like I've not been following this super closely, but from my understanding, it's that Wintermute, when crypto, like the broader crypto market, had that big crash a few, like a couple months ago, Binance's API stopped working for Wintermute and they lost, I think, billions of dollars in it. And so Wintermute are now suing Binance, I believe. And like one of the theories that I've heard is that market makers are like pulling liquidity from the Bitcoin market. I don't know if you've...
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure all of that's true. I think generally speaking, there's 50 different things that are going on, right? So they all have different components. But, you know, from my perspective, we got below 95. We got below the bull's last stand. That was my thesis. Next thing you know, we're at 80K. Whatever the cause, the thesis was there's too many people who are underwater. Keep it simple.
So you talked a little bit before about who's buying here, because like someone's buying in massive size, volumes are high. Who do you think that is, if you had to speculate? Because you mentioned before banks, I could believe that. I think especially in the US, the banks are going to be stepping into Bitcoin in a pretty big way over the next few years. I think they'll start custodying Bitcoin, offering loans and all this kind of stuff. Who do you think that might be?
It is very interesting because it's not happening via the ETFs. That to me is the most intriguing part of it, which also means we don't know.
Yeah.
Right. So you can never know the buyers until later on. But what I suspect we will see, long-term holder supply takes 5 months till a coin reaches that level. The amount of buying that's occurred over the last 6 months, so we're probably getting close to it. I would say that long-term supply starts bottoming soon and starts moving significantly higher. If it breaks to a new all-time high, this is the only way we can really speculate about this stuff. It feels to me like it's got to be banks and it could be sovereigns because it's in the spot market, which is a strategic position. And the size of it is just extraordinary. And how do we know it's big? Because we saw the selling. The sell side was massive, like $3 billion, $2 billion a day. I'm not bringing that in. I'm talking about being happy with a 5K clip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like the average investor is not bringing tens of billions of dollars a week. And it's in spot markets.
Yeah.
Feels meaningful.
Like I'm buying here, but the market doesn't care that I'm buying here. I want to know who the big buyers are.
Totally. So they're very interesting. One sold Bitcoin is one sold Bitcoin. Doesn't matter who's selling it. That's why we use that 6 month cutoff, because at least it's a sold Bitcoin that we know wasn't just, you know, transacted day to day and part of the noise.
Well,
all of these long terms that sold at above 100, they could buy back in.
And they will.
They just made the best decision of their lives to sell at 120, 110. Now they're going, oh, okay, I just clean that profit, jump back in slowly.
Props to Mr. 80,000 Bitcoin who sold the Pico top.
He literally could just have a bid now.
What a go.
Like, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Like, you can now rotate right back in. Like, that sell side could literally just go, okay, thank you.
Imagine the tax bill on $9 billion.
Oh, my God.
That's a good problem to have.
That's a great problem to have. You need a legal team.
I always think about like the prep you need to sell that much Bitcoin would be a nightmare.
Totally.
Like, you're just sitting there with spreadsheets and just talking to accountants and being like, how do I get, like, I need to find the right OTC, find the right desk. How do I even sell this thing?
Like, I mean, is it hard though? Or is it literally just like, Alex Thorne, I'm going to send you loads of Bitcoin and sell it to OTC.
With tax, man, like thinking about the tax part, I think that's what's really hard.
If you think about it, if you're cashing out that much, you're setting up an estate. That's a job. That's like a whole thing. So, and there's a lot of people who are like, why didn't they sell the first time we got to 120K? It's like, because these decisions take time.
Yeah.
It's a big job.
It's a huge job.
A lot of stuff to do.
Yeah. Alex Thorne is the reason for this bear market.
Cheers, Alex.
Thank you,
man. Obviously, while Bitcoin's been crashing, it's not like the whole macro world has been super healthy. Yes. Like, everything's going down at the moment.
Yes.
I don't know what gold's at the moment, but how much of that do you think is playing into this?
Oh, macro's a huge part of it. So I would generally just go and listen to your podcast with Lynn, who's going to have far more of you. I consider myself a macro tourist, so I certainly rely on other people to think about it, but I also like considering these ideas. My general view is that liquidity just hasn't been ripping. There's been a whole bunch of things, TGA, sucking liquidity and all that stuff. My kind of, if I was to give it a general description, we're at the very tail end of all the money that got pumped in COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now, as Alec was saying, trying to just find the place where it's being treated best. And it's a bit of a dog eat dog world. I think actually, if you look at the way that the Bitcoin crypto world has operated this cycle, there's been Bitcoin that's run and like the occasional pump somewhere. Right.
Meme coins.
Well, they had their time in the sun. And then what do you hear about them anymore?
Yeah.
Solana had a time in the sun. Then it's, who cares? Like ETH got within like 50 weeks. $50 of its all time high and is now in a horrendous bear market. So there's all these things where like it's money just kind of rotates. So if you think about if you're awash with liquidity, rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
If there's a limited amount and it's starting to get scarce, this is also why I think, and TXMC and I have a very same opinion here, that altcoins were a ZERP phenomenon.
Yeah.
There's no narratives left. There's no reason for anyone to like be bullish on this stuff. So they're just kind of chasing that final pump. Everyone's now decided that Zcash is because like we can't pump all the tokens. We can't pump 10 tokens. Let's all just get a marketing team and just pump one.
It's just a VC company. It's all a VC company. Marketing.
So, so everyone just goes for the one thing because like at least we can pump one coin, right? Yeah. Can we do that? Have we got enough money left for that? So I really think we're at like the tail end. And also interest rates aren't zero.
Yeah.
And that's a hard, like, it's not a hard money environment. The dollar's still a shit coin, but it is a harder money. So as a result of higher interest rates, people have to be more, you know, they have to think about. I mean, if interest rates went to 20%, you better believe that people would only be buying stuff that's worthwhile.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same idea of moving to a Bitcoin standard. People are only going to invest their Bitcoin if it's a good idea. So in a harder money world where it's not ZERP, Fartcoin doesn't make as much sense. So I think people are going to start having to think that way.
I think when I was speaking to Lynn, she said a load of interesting stuff that I'd not really considered before. So she, first of all, was talking about like liquidity potentially drying up. She actually said it's not at that bad a spot right now, but like QT is coming to an end.
Yep.
And she was talking about this idea of QE, but following GDP. Obviously in Bitcoin, people like to talk about these huge print events and like if we're not going into that world and instead it's just going to track GDP at 3-4% or whatever that is, I think that's going to change Bitcoin's market dynamic completely. And I think it might look more like 2025 for a longer period of time.
Potentially, but at the same time, so I do think that everything about rate of change. So a lot of people like to look at absolute value, but in reality, the rate of change is in most things, engineering systems, in markets, the whole lot, rate of change is actually more important. So we haven't seen an explosive growth in liquidity. But if you think about what is likely coming down the road, QT comes to an end. So at the margin, the rate of change is that's going to be less restrictive. They're going to have to go back to balance sheet expansion. And my general thesis, like in the macro world, I don't have the skills and the chops to like get into the plumbing and understand SOFR rates and all of that. I mean, we work with the Bitcoin layer. We rely on Nick for a lot of those.
Nick's the guy for that.
Nick's the guy for that. Lynn's for that. Luke, understanding the plumbing. But I'm a simple dude. I just look at gold, and I think gold and Bitcoin are two very special assets because their prices are not just a price, they're actually information.
Mm-hmm.
When you see something happen on a Sunday night, you see all the TradFi guys posting the Bitcoin chart, being like, look at shitty store of value this is. I'm like, that's your equity portfolio tomorrow, sir.
Yep.
What you're looking at is a lens into what's coming down the road. So gold doesn't move until it wants to move. And when it moves, you should pay attention. And it's clearly moved. The most overheated it's been since 1979 in terms of distance from the 200-week moving average, no matter how you want to cut it. It's telling us that the system is bankrupt and we have to move to a new reserve asset. Like mm-hmm. that is a very important signal. In my world, gold tells me where we're going. Bitcoin is much more sensitive to the near term.
Yeah.
And the near term, the rate of change of liquidity hasn't been great. It may actually be kind of hairy moving forward. You get any weakness in equity market, that falls off. Suddenly collateral goes down, bond volatility goes up, and everything just gets squeezed. That doesn't mean that the follow-up is not going to be tremendously on the side. So I do believe there is a convergence between Bitcoin and gold that shows up, but I think Bitcoin goes the road to get there. And it's been telling you that the equity market probably is due for a pullback as well, kind of front runs that liquidity profile. So my base case is that Bitcoin will probably lead us back out of this thing when all the equity guys are going, shit, call Jay Powell, it's all over. And Bitcoin's going to start bottoming out and moving and say, here it comes.
Do you know one of my favorite, this might be a really stupid take, but one thing that I quite often watch is, so UK markets open 5 hours before New York. And it seems like for those first 5 hours, all that those markets are doing is basically guessing what the US markets are going to do when they open.
Yes.
So there's no signal there. It's like, we think it's going to go down, so everything goes red or whatever. But if you watch that happen and then you compare it to Bitcoin, like Bitcoin is actually the signal.
Yes.
And I don't know why the people trading UK equities aren't just looking at what Bitcoin's doing and be like, today's going to be a green day.
Absolutely. No, I fully agree. And like on Mondays, I often see the Australian stock market doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because it's in the weekend. And then on Tuesday, America's done something in Australia. It's like, oh yeah, we got to sell off as well. Like something wrong. So it very much, it's a response type factor.
I love the idea that Bitcoin is basically just a global prediction market.
It's the market. Index.
Yeah.
It's the index. And I think that is coming more and more into people's view. Like again, let's think about where we are right now. We're at a point where sovereigns are taking positions in Bitcoin, right? We're 16 years into this experiment. We don't have to convince anybody that Bitcoin's going to stick around. Even the bears that are out there are like, okay, now it's starting to get a bit undervalued versus gold.
Yeah.
Right. It's probably going to come back. It's a cockroach that keeps coming back from these 80% drawdowns. Like, oh, it might go down further. It's like, yeah, but they also know that they should probably buy that dip too.
I think even Andy Constant bought this dip.
Yes. No, even guys who don't like it, like Peter Schiff, eventually he's going to realize that he should probably just stack.
And a couple of one of our Orange subscribers said something very interesting, which is, I don't care about Bitcoin tops at all. I care about the bottoms.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And these guys are like serious traders. And so that's a really interesting way to start thinking about Bitcoin, especially as a hodler investor. Where is the bottom? Like, as long as the floor keeps rising over the long arc of time, that is actually the success metric of Bitcoin. Like, there's always a fair value of Bitcoin that, and the price is like oscillating around it. Up and down. We were kind of a bit too high. This is the way I frame it in my mind. And now we're just finding that fair value. And all the smart money, they literally just go, where's the bottom? That's all I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know when it finally, after this really human organic hype cycle comes over and they're finally back at that fair value, which Bitcoin should probably have just been priced at that level this whole time anyway, if it was like not a human market. That's all they care about. So it's super interesting to think of that way. This just, which is why this bottom formation period is going to be like super exciting.
Totally.
Like I'm super keen to just watch this bottom happen and be hammered out, because that is the fair value of Bitcoin that is now being reset. So we're in like a new chapter now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of,
and
cool.
This is where you start thinking about the psychology of resetting cycles. We were talking about this morning.
Yeah.
There's this process where everybody over the next like couple of days, you were using the term, is going to have to grieve.
Dude,
this red candle.
We need to grieve a little bit.
So people are going to grieve, but like even just having
What does grieve mean? Go sideways for a bit.
No. People need to like come to terms with the fact
personally.
We're at 80K.
Okay.
Yeah, they're going to come to terms with it. So I think people are going to go through that process. I mean, even just having this conversation, I'm like, fuck, I'm actually more bullish than I was this morning. And yeah. I bought the dip this morning.
I don't know. When you see a 30% down and you've invested and been watching this thing and like been a fan and really excited, and then you kind of get denied, and then Thanksgiving is coming up, Christmas is coming up. You have to see your family that you've been bullish to. You have this heavy, heavy heart.
You sold them on it last year at 100 and something K. Yep.
Exactly. And you have this heavy heart, like especially men. We don't take the time to just sit and feel that. Oh, yeah, I kind of have to like feel the loss and like breathe through it, talk to some friends. But you need to do that ASAP instead of sitting on X and just watching all these charts. Because every single person who was saying it's going to go 250K is now calling a bottom and calling something.
Calling for 50.
We're going to go straight back up. It's fine. We're going to be 100K in no time. Like, you need to stop looking at all that. You need to grieve a little bit. I think, and it's okay. It sucks. It's okay. It's a new chapter. It's going to be exciting.
And that's the thing, bear markets. And I think the correct way to think about this current market structure is to think about it as a bear market.
Yes.
And do not anchor to bear market must go down 75% or must go down 55%. Drop those type of metrics. Bear markets are things that reset investor expectations, right? I think most people, after we hammer out this floor, will have reset their expectation to say, okay, we're probably not going to $1 million on the fourth year of this halving cycle, right? People are going to have reset expectations. In fact, people are going to probably have expectations that go too far the other way. Everyone's going to converge, and you'll start seeing those dudes on Reddit being like, I've sold everything, I'll buy it back at 12K, right? That's what we saw back down there at 15K when FTX blew up. When you start seeing everyone overcorrecting in the wrong direction, we have now reset expectations, which is the job of bear markets. Probably a few treasury companies have to puke as well, but that's a different topic.
Do you know, can you remember what we closed the year at in 2024? What like, the final price?
Yes, it was 92 something, I think.
Okay. Do you know the thing that I'm most concerned about is that HODL's green, 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 red is wrong. We need to get above 92K by the end of the year to keep that meme alive.
If we get above 92K, I mean, that's a pretty significant bounce. I mean, again, 95 is a very important level. The bulls have a lot of work to repair this price chart, no question. Not impossible, but I'm not anticipating all-time highs this year. I know some people.
Oh no, me neither.
No, and however, I also wouldn't be honestly. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, my base case has been the true market mean. Now, again, true market mean 82K. That doesn't mean that's like the wick of the bottom. We've historically traded below it, but that is the zone where investors are going to be so sensitive that they're going to have to reconnect. So, if you think about an ETF investor, they've been DCAing since they went live. They are now underwater or at their cost basis. They now have a decision to make. Do I still like Bitcoin? I liked it at 95 and 100 and 110. And I liked it at 70 and I liked it at 45. Do I still like it? And if the answer is yes, we'll start seeing the ETF outflows slow. We'll start seeing realized profits on chain slowing, which we're seeing already. We'll see the people who bought the top and don't have the conviction realize losses will spike higher. We saw $1 billion yesterday. I'm sure it's higher today. We'll start seeing these signs of like a reset. People who bought high are going to get out. The people who bought high and kind of don't care are going to hodl. Long-term supply will start climbing. We'll probably start seeing bear market formations, I think, hammering out now. I thought back in 2022, the 17K, the first time we got them, three arrows blew up. That's when I think bottom formation started. And every metric I look at says that that's when bottom formation started. I have a feeling that this might be, and perhaps with that wick to just get rid of all the leverage. I want to see all the degenerate leverage guys get washed out first. I have a feeling somewhat similar to that. We still went down lower because of FTX, but it was like down sideways and then straight back up. It was like a hyperextension and a lot of buying happened there. But bottom formation, I don't think we're too far away from starting to hammer out that floor. That's my base case. Again, base case is just base case, but that's where I sit at the moment.
Based on nothing analytical, I think we might be getting close to the bottom just because I've started seeing the flood of texts come in from people. I actually got my favorite one yesterday from one of my friends. He's been in Bitcoin for a little while, but he's not like a full-on Bitcoiner. I just got a text from him saying, why Bitcoin cheap? And I think when you start seeing that, you're probably getting towards the bottom, at least from a sentiment perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And bear markets aren't a drawdown percentage. They're not anything other than resetting investor expectations. What resets expectations? People flying high and then being brought right back down to reality.
Yeah.
Once your feet are on the ground, you then go, okay, we're at 80K. I'm going to accept that we're at 80K. You're telling me that if we go down to 50K, I can buy 0.1 with a 5K slug? I don't think we go there. So therefore, am I happy with 60? Am I happy with 70? Am I happy to start just like DCAing now and like taking nibbles? Like you start making decisions accordingly once you have just come back to reality and said, well, look, we're not at 100K anymore. So one thing's for sure, the top may be in, but we're not at the top right now.
Yeah. Once people start doing the calculations to figure out their net worth, that's normally a sign that we might be getting too close to the top.
Well, I mean, for me, I knew that the gold had hit its top at 4,300. Why? Because I updated my precious metals spreadsheet 3 times in a single day, right? Normally I update it once a week at most.
Did you sell any?
No, I didn't. And the main reason is a tax thing. I still think that gold's going to have a good year. So for me, it's not a good year for me to sell the gold.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about it for sure. I'm actually kind of thinking about like, even can I make the tax work? Cause I like would rotate the gold into Bitcoin now. So I'm actually playing around with that idea. That's certainly where I sit, but I knew that it was the top for the meantime because I changed my spreadsheet 3 times. I'm like, that's it. It's over.
So going like, there'll be a lot of people out there panicking at the moment.
Sure.
What would your kind of message to them be?
So I think really you got to just, why are you here in the first place? Right. Most often, your expectations don't align with your time frame. So a lot of people who buy and then the price goes down straight away feel bad, but you have to remember, who did you buy that for? When I'm stacking sats, I'm buying them for like my future self in many, many years. I'm buying them for my son who's, you know, 10 weeks old.
I didn't know you'd said you had a son publicly.
No. So I'm a 10-week-old boy at home.
Congratulations.
He's going to be 18.
It's the best fucking thing ever, isn't it?
It is. No, it totally is. So he's going to be 18 before he starts seeing any of those stats. I'm like, if I'm buying at 80K, 82K, and it goes to 70, where is it going to be when he's 18 years old?
Yeah.
Substantially higher. We talked about this when we were moving our retirement fund across to Bitcoin. That was the case. It's like, okay, I'm going to retire in 30 years. I'm going to need this in 30 years. Where the hell is Bitcoin going to be in 30 years' time? Much higher.
Yeah. I mean, I do the same thing. Since the day my daughter was born, she has a DCA that just hits every week.
Totally.
And like, if you're buying Bitcoin for that long term, just who cares about this?
Exactly. So I think first things first, just accept what has already happened, right? Go through the grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought the top, it's okay. There'll be many tops. There's always many tops in Bitcoin. And you have to then make, I think really the right way to frame this up, no one can predict the future, but if you prepare for it, like I've been talking about this 82K level ad nauseum when we're up at 100 something, and it seems completely irrational to get there. But the idea is that by the time we get there, we've already, like our subscribers have already processed it. So the grieving period for a lot of people who have no idea what's going on is going to be months. And what's going to happen is they're going to get increasingly bearish as the bottom gets hammered out and every sell-off goes down lower and lower, and they're going to go, oh, I'm disillusioned, I'm out, and they're going to walk away. What you actually need to do is think about what would happen if we go to 80K. What if you can't control the market? It's like the tide. You get sucked out to sea if you swim against it. The only thing you can control are your decisions. I've already made my decisions at 115K when I sold my MSCI. I said, I'm going to start allocating that capital if we get anywhere within a sniff of that true market mean. Here we are. What am I doing? All the money I sold for my MSCI is now allocated. And now any income that I kept coming in, straight in, because I believe this is a good place to buy.
The funny thing as well is like when Bitcoin's flying, when it's 120K, people are like, oh, I wish it was 80K still. And then it gets here and everyone panics. Like totally. Instead of grieving, you should just celebrate the opportunity to buy more. If you're buying for the right reason, you're buying for the right time frame, then just buy more.
Absolutely. And for me, like I'm a simple dude. I don't trade. I a lot of people think that you should trade. Trading is a horrible sport.
I don't.
It is a horrible sport. Everyone's tried to do it.
I learned my lesson in 2017.
Yep. You've got some stories for it.
Oh, my
it.
God.
Like,
same. Same.
So trading is a horrible sport. It consumes, like for me, if I put $100 perp on, I don't care about my like net worth, which is 90% Bitcoin.
I'm the same. It's so weird.
I'm worried about the $30 that I'm down on my perp.
It's because it's gambling. Like I was talking to me and Pete were in Vegas recently, and he was like, we were talking about betting, you know, $100 on blackjack or whatever. And he was like, why am I more worried about this when like my net worth in Bitcoin is fluctuating orders of magnitude more than that every day?
because you believe in it. So yeah. A few like, kind of tips for people. One, if you're levered and you're looking at a liquidation level that's like anywhere close to this, just sort it out. Don't dick around with it. Sort it out. As the market belts out of bottom, work out who you're buying for and what time frame. Allow yourself to just like realize that we're not at the top anymore, right? So you now have to ask, are we going much lower? And if so, by how much? And like as a hodler, you never buy and it goes straight up from there. You always go down 5-10%. So work out what your pain threshold is. There is a thing called pain to the upside. It's rare. It's rare. Most of the time, pain is always to the downside because you're allocated. And the people saying the pain is to the upside, generally because they're super long and they want to tell Peter Schiff that he's wrong. Pain is usually to the downside, and markets love to hunt pain. So if your liquidation level is close, get rid of it. If anything in your portfolio, and this is just like a general piece of market advice, if anything in your portfolio has you unable to sleep or you think about it every single day, you are overexposed. Like, it's just really simple. If you are thinking about this thing and it is like drawing your mind power, for me, I don't think about my Bitcoin, my gold ever.
Yeah.
Honestly. So I avoid buying the tops, right? That's for me. If I just stop buying high, and really I didn't buy very much above 100K, if I stop buying high, I have cash to buy when it goes lower, because it always does. So that's the same thing as selling the top, just minus the tax bill. Just understand who you're buying for, what your time frame is. And if your position is keeping you awake, you're too exposed, make some decisions and try and make them months ahead of when you actually need them.
Totally. I don't know how long ago it was. Was it about 2 years ago we made our bet for the end of this year?
It would have been 2024, because I think we would have just started Check on Chain when we had that.
So it would have been early 24, March, probably. April. So maybe 18 months ago, a bit more. And mine and Pete's guesses look absolutely moronic at this point. I think I said 282K by the end of this year.
And it was the maximum price by 2025, right?
Yeah, Pete said 350K. Yeah.
And mine was 250, which, to be fair, I think like back then, it's much harder to read this thing, right? Totally. The ETFs had just gone live. 250 was where I kind of said that's probably as high as we go in 2025. However, I would say, you know, a couple of months later, a lot of people have been calling me bearish all cycle, because I said like 150.
I'm one of the people that's been calling you bearish.
I was saying 150 is, and to be fair, I wrote a piece at the top, right, where I said, called Add Another Trillion, where I was like, you know, honestly, I think we deserve a run at 150. And that was because back in January, this is looking at capital flows and how much money had come into the ETFs and whatever. And my view was, when we were at 100K in January, I don't think we deserve a run at 150. I don't think we've had the inflows yet. When we got to like, it was like 118, we're going for the second all-time high. I wrote a piece saying, look, I think we deserve a run at 150. We got to 126 and that was the end of it. The reality is we then have to adjust. Mm-hmm. And by the time we had that second all-time high fail, we had the liquidation event. By the time we got to 115, 113, 112, I'm like, I think something's up. So you got to update your price and say, look, I still think we deserve a run at 150. People call me a bear because that's not high enough. It's like, yeah, but that is also the level where, statistically speaking, people were going to offload. Just turns out they were offloading at 126 rather than at 150. And to be honest, through the whole 100 zone. So you got to be flexible, right? You got to be flexible in your thinking.
And like Lynn said in the show we did, there's probably some amount of self-fulfilling prophecy that people think a cycle's still totally alive, so they start selling. But I think here right now, we should make our prediction for 2026.
Ooh,
we can have. So I owe you 100K sats. Yep. Pete owes you 100K sats. I'm willing to concede that
you're
here.
I
don't think we're going to go to 282K by the end of December. What are you thinking?
I actually think 2026, I mean, it's going to be driven a lot by macro, no question. I think 2026 is actually going to be constructive, honestly, because I can't see a world where the liquidity doesn't come back in. I do think the Fed's going to have to expand their balance sheet. So if we think about like 150, I think probably happens, honestly. And the thing is, now that we've had this at another trillion, we've had the capital flows in my mental model to actually justify a run to 150. I don't think we had that in January. Let's have another year of bottoming out 80K, maybe it takes a couple of months. By the time we start drifting up towards the all-time high, the capital flows that I personally, and I stand by this, I still think that the capital flows justify that move to 150. There's going to be more capital coming in by that point. So then you start talking about, well, maybe the levels start drifting higher. So look, 200 would be fantastic. I do think it's going to be a positive year, and it's a positive year coming off something like 80K. So for me, if I'm buying 80K and we're going to go up to like 150, 160, I'll take it. So look, let's stick with 150 as a level, because we're talking about a 12-month time frame. I think we could probably get there, truthfully.
I hate price predictions, but they're quite fun. But it is a bit fun. Yeah. Like the thing, when I look at next year, Jerome Powell's out. Someone's going to come in, step in at the Fed, who is probably going to be more in line with Trump, if not just an outright Trump stooge. They've got midterms. They're going to want the economy flying. Like, I can see a lot of reasons why macro starts going ballistic.
Show me the incentive and I'll show you the result.
I'll go higher than you just because I may as well keep
you
the theme going.
You want to get your 100K sats back?
I'll go 190.
Ooh. Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned midterms. I think Trump and the Republicans are going to have a really rough 2026. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep the House. They have a stacked House, right, and Senate. If that flips to Dem, oof, I don't know if that's looking good, especially for AI and that type of trade. So for me, to make a prediction, where Bitcoin bottoms is super important. If we bottom around the 80s, yeah, easily we're going to surpass all-time high next year, I think. But it depends how low we go. So my prediction is going to be 126K.
Just tag the high.
By like end of year, by this time.
I'm pulling ETH, get 50%, 50 bucks below your high, and then
we're going to have this discussion again. And we're going to be like, so now what? Like, it's the same as last year. What the hell? I feel like that's the type of vibe that I'm feeling.
Probably statistically, that's the best guess. I would say so.
Yeah. No, that's good. We've got a nice spread actually there. So there's enough gap between them.
I hope you're right.
I do too. I would never have guessed we were going to end this year below 100 when we made that.
No, that is surprising. Yeah.
It's exciting.
Especially inflation adjusted.
Like, yeah. And to be like, that's the thing, right? When you're at 126, it's actually not the worst year, right? I think a lot of it people expected substantially higher, but like 126 is still within like reasonable bounds. But coming down to 80, I think that's surprised a lot of people, no doubt.
Do you think that we're going to see a rotation from gold into Bitcoin?
Oh, totally. Totally. I mean, I'm literally thinking about, do I take an extra tax hit to do so?
But you're an outlier there because you're obviously a Bitcoiner who has a bit of gold. Most people are gold bugs that maybe don't have any exposure to Bitcoin.
Yes, but at the same time, people love momentum. Mm. And I think if we find a floor and then Bitcoin starts moving, because again, once the thing starts moving, everyone's going to go, oh, that cockroach didn't die. I sold my Bitcoin. Maybe I should get back in.
Smart money wants to find the bottom, man.
Totally.
They don't care. They want to find the bottom.
I can't stop thinking about the just sheer magnitude of selling. Who are the buyers?
Yeah.
Someone serious. It's someone very, very serious. And we're going to find out at some point, but it's someone very, very serious. Has to be, because otherwise we'd be at zero. You know what I mean? Like the scale of it is just too big.
When you say sovereigns, you mentioned that a couple of times in the show. If you had to guess, what kind of sovereigns do you think are buying?
It's not some peewee country in Europe. You know what I mean?
It could be like Gulf states.
So my base case is it's going to be either the biggest countries or the smallest ones that have nothing to lose.
Mm.
They're the most likely. Like Australia ain't buying Bitcoin anytime soon.
Neither is the UK.
Neither is the UK. Neither is like probably Germany sold theirs. I think these like middle of the road countries, they don't have the incentive. The little guys have the incentive because mm-hmm. they could get shut out of the financial system. They could also just like, you know, like El Salvador, they want to get ahead in some way. And then you got the big dogs, the Chinas, the US, the Russias. These are like the big countries who are like, they have a real incentive, which is we need to save our money somewhere.
Do you not even think like Australia's sovereign wealth fund could be buying?
I don't think they're that smart.
Because it's interesting. Was it the Belgian sovereign wealth fund that bought something recently?
I'm not sure.
I could be wrong on that. But a country like that has recently come out and said they've bought Bitcoin.
Was it Czech Republic?
That would make sense. Yeah, they're pretty bullish on Bitcoin, I think.
I feel like any carbon neutral like government isn't going to be able to buy it.
do you think that narrative, they still care about that
dude,
narrative?
They don't understand yet. Like, especially Australia, like they'll get one bit of pushback, just it burns all this, and then they'll be like, okay, we can't touch it.
Yeah. Even though the economy's run on oil.
There's a good story. Up in Newcastle, which is about an hour north of Sydney. There's a bit of an uproar because it's a little bit old now, but there's these wind turbines that have been sitting on the docks for like years. And there's all these like government proposals about they want to build offshore wind turbines. People are like, no, the whales and blah, blah, blah. It's finally come out that those wind turbines actually aren't for the offshore. They're actually for an inland wind turbine, but they can't fit them on the trucks because they don't fit on the roads. So they're just, these wind turbine blades are just rotting on the docks because they can't move them. That's your Australian government in a nutshell. So I'm not too, I don't think they'd be clinging to Bitcoin anytime soon.
That's almost any government in a nutshell, I think.
It's kind of sad.
It's going to be, this year, even though it's been maybe disappointing from a bull market perspective, is probably the most interesting year in terms of what Bitcoin is going to look like in the future.
Total reshaping of And that's what I mean. The three pillars, the ETFs changed a lot, not because they're like the biggest buyer, not because they've changed market structure or the way the on-chain works. Like from my view, they're 20% of the demand. They changed the regulatory understanding. They allowed institutions to come in. They can put on basis trades. They can put on long positions. The IBIT options are now 60% of the underlying. So you've got 60% of options open interest. Now they can buy Bitcoin and rent it out with covered calls. And we're going to see a lot of that. So I think that the ETFs just completely changed the perception and the access. The hodler sell side and the great rotation has genuinely been a changing of the guard. It'll take time to process it and for the market to hammer out a floor and find that new equilibrium, but that has changed the holder base. And then the world of options is going to be very, very interesting moving forward. It's going to change market structure forever, already has, arguably. But we're going to see a lot more of that. I mean, again, gold's options are 120% of the underlying for GLD. If you look at IBIT, we're halfway there. So mm-hmm. they're going to get much, much bigger.
Well, I think, so we should talk about why we're here.
Oh, yes.
Because there's a shitcoin conference going on shitcoin in convention. Sydney at the moment. I had no plans to come, but a few of my friends were coming down. I was like, okay, I'll come do a show. We can hang out, have a few beers. But I went to the opening party last night and it really surprised me. Like, so this was a room full of shitcoiners. A couple of people like came over, joined in with our group and started talking, and they couldn't understand why we only cared about Bitcoin.
Crazy, right?
Like, I don't know. I think we're really insular. We're in a bit of an echo bubble, an echo chamber with like the Bitcoin community. Like, we think everyone thinks like this. So being in a room with people that are like talking about meme coins and like whatever shitcoin under the sun, and then them totally not getting why you're into Boomer coin. Like how weird is that that still exists despite the market just absolutely tanking?
Totally. And I tapped it, mate, because I very much view being here as it's a business maneuver because I just want to get exposed, because the Australian Bitcoin scene is actually very strong.
There's like some great Bitcoin.
The great Bitcoin is in Australia. The Bitcoin Bush Bash is fantastic. Bitcoin Alive is an actual conference, Bitcoin only. Really, really good. So the Bitcoin contingent, albeit small, right? The conference gets 400 people there. So it's a sport, which by the way, makes them better. Right? Yeah. Smaller venues.
But they're like hardcore.
Hardcore and really high signal. But the Australian crypto scene has no idea we exist, and we don't care that they exist. So I very much view this as like, it's like going to the zoo. And we were talking this morning about like the impacts of AI, and I'm a little bit more skeptical about like how much AI is going to, it's going to be transformative, no question. I don't trust it for anything that I use it for. Like, it makes mistakes all the time, and I find I'm constantly checking it. But I also like to think. Like, thinking is one of my favorite things to do. So for me, I actually don't like outsourcing my thinking. So for me as a professional, AI doesn't help me. But then we talk about like the zoo that we're about to go and see, you then realize where the actual bell curve is. People still think that Ripple's going to be a thing. I was talking to a mate the other day who said that like the Solana and the Ripple ETFs had really, really strong inflows, like the best ETFs of the year. And I'm like, okay, so AI may be retarded, but so are the people it's going to replace. So I'm like, it's actually not that AI is great. It's that the bell curve is kind of challenging, and we're about to go and look at it.
Yeah, the bar's not that high.
I know. That's the scary thing about it.
I was there for like an hour last night, and then people around me were talking about shitcoins. I was just like, I'm just going to go home and watch the Ashes. Man. I just bailed and came home and watched the cricket.
Honestly, it's just fiat. They're just stocks that can pump and make. Aussies love just making money. Like, we're a super rich country. Everyone just... You just invest in ETFs here or property, and there's just this new thing that's just stock. It's just stocks.
Yeah.
So people just can get rich off of it. It's just rich guys doing rich things.
Yeah.
They don't care about the fundamentals.
Like, there are no fundamentals.
The reason they don't understand Bitcoin is because they have never actually studied the thing. All they know is that, is this thing going to go up? Like, that's kind of the questions that they have with each other. Is like, is it going to pump? Like, we don't talk about that with Bitcoin, really. Like, the fundamentals of Bitcoin are why we're here, and just a lot of people don't have the time or... I don't know. They don't have the long-term vision to actually buy into that. So they just don't understand it. They're like, why would you buy that? It's not just going to rip 1,000,000%. It's like, it's not about that.
Well, I've actually been enjoying, because you've recently been going down the level 6 Matthew McConaughey scale, getting into like the why Bitcoin. Like, you've been in the industry for years now.
Ages, yeah.
Tell us about like going into the actual Bitcoin rabbit hole, because it is. You go through this phase and it's very nostalgic. As you were telling me the stories, like, damn, I remember when I went down
the good
phase.
Old days.
Yeah, we like understanding mining and all that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I got a little too attached to the price with Bitcoin and short term. And I really needed a way to zoom out a little bit because Bitcoin is not a 2025 asset. You do not buy it. I mean, if you're a hodler and you're trying to accumulate for your 10-year self, price movements today shouldn't affect you as much as they do. And they were affecting me a lot. So I was like, I need to study UTXOs. I need to study how the blockchain actually works. I need to like go deep, like read the Satoshi emails, like really understand the fundamentals to like build my trust again in the actual asset itself, in the system, in the software, in the group of nodes in the world. And I just got like, I reinvigorated my excitement for Bitcoin because I'm like, no, this thing fucking is amazing.
Was there anything when you were doing that was like, holy shit? Like, even if it was just like learning something again, or was there something that really sort of settled you?
Oh my God. Just like the brilliance of the design of nodes and mining,
mm-hmm.
and how multiple nodes can have different copies of the ledger, and then you must require one node to decide that this is the next block. Is everyone happy with this? Yes. If something goes wrong, it auto corrects itself. And it's just like, and then I was imagining how banks manage their ledgers and humans manage ledgers right now, and it's, no one knows, it's a black box. Humans make wrong decisions all the time. It's not automated at all. They can shut down your accounts. They can move your money. They can, like, so many governments just take people's money. Like, I think Lebanon, like a bunch of places, right?
All over the world.
And just the brilliance of the Bitcoin network and software to just automate and take the human error out of that. I was like, nah, nothing can fuck with this. Because, and nothing will ever get the amount of broad reach that Bitcoin has. Like, I just don't think so. There's a first mover advantage. Like, the whole Satoshi story is also just fascinating. The fact that he hasn't come back. The fact that there's no guy that's, he can, imagine Satoshi could tweet. Like, I feel like, dude, I swear, like, he would say some whack stuff and like tank the market. I don't know. I love the entire, it's almost like a biblical story. Like, the narrative of Bitcoin is so strong. So I think just it has all the elements to be a long-term stalwart asset. And price this year, it doesn't really matter. You know what's like actually exciting? We can buy cheaper Bitcoin.
Exactly. This is not something to be scared about. This is opportunity.
The last bottom was, what was it? FTX was 16K.
15.6.
15K. If our bottom now can be anything over that, that's fantastic. Like, if you zoom out, like if you zoom out to the 2028, when the politicians switch over in America, that's going to be a whole other world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Bitcoin will be up or down by then? It's like, I'm damn sure it's going to be up.
Yeah. Let's fucking
go. So, fuck yeah.
Yep.
Get
bullish.
I'm excited to go and see this zoo. I'm going to go for exactly 20 minutes. I'm going to watch your talk, watch you dunk on them all, and then I'm going to leave.
That's it. And basically, like, a lot of the things I'm going to talk about is like the ETFs, granted, mine, excluding the last couple of days, the ETFs are bigger than, like, in terms of capital inflows, just the dollars people have actually invested are bigger than every single ASX stock in the Australian stock market, except for the big four banks and BHP. So, like, the inflows are the sixth biggest company in Australia. And if you look at the AUM, where the AUM peaked, it was bigger than everything except CommBank, which is our biggest bank. So, like, the scale of it is just tremendous.
And they've been around for...
Since January 24.
Yeah.
So it's remarkable just seeing the scale of it. And actually, I should close with my favorite metric in all of on-chain data, and it's the backbone metric, is the realized cap. The realized cap values every UTXO at the time when it moved on-chain. If you bought a coin in 2019 at 10K, it's saved at that 10K price. The realized cap is how much we as Bitcoiners have entrusted to the asset. $1.12 trillion. So whenever someone tells you that Bitcoin has no intrinsic value, there's $1.12 trillion that disagrees with you, where Bitcoiners have gone, no way. I trust this thing to look after my savings. It's a monumental amount. At the all-time high, we had more unrealized profit. That's our cost basis. We're at $2.5 trillion. We had the unrealized profit in Bitcoin is bigger than Berkshire Hathaway, right? Rat poison squared my ass. So get bullish, because Bitcoin's not going anywhere. It's going to come back like a cockroach. Happy days.
Let's fucking go. All right, this has been awesome, guys. We'll be back in a year together.
Can I add one more thing before we close?
100K.
Because something I think is actually important. Charles Edwards has been on about the quantum threat recently. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to handicap what is true and isn't in the quantum space.
Yeah.
I do think it's worth, like, Bitcoin is just generally speaking, having a conversation about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what would just destroy the final piece of FUD that's out there is having a strategy, working out what it's going to look like. Whilst, I'm not quite sure that I agree with, like, that it's coming in a year or it's coming in 2 years' time. I still think Charles is very right that we should start talking about it now. And we should just have a game plan. If we have a game plan by the end of 2026, let's use this bear market, put aside the price, let's work out what the strategy is. And if the strategy is we need to do more coding, more work, more research, which we will, I'm in no way qualified enough to understand what needs to go into it. Let's have that conversation now, because I'll tell you what, when you solve that problem, there ain't nothing left.
Well, let's have the conversation, because I think this is super interesting. I, again, have no idea what the timescale is on this, but let's just assume it happens at some point.
And if over a long enough time span, it will happen.
Yeah. So the question is, like, what happens? We're going to move to an address format that is quantum proof. I don't think that will be contentious, because everyone will have to
agree.
Do that.
Yep.
So that part's easy. The tricky part is, what do you do about all the coins that are in these old Paste Pub Key hash addresses or whatever? Do you freeze them or do you let them be stolen?
So first things first, I think separating those two, they're two separate issues.
Mm-hmm.
It is an absolute mistake to put them in the same bit. Two separate issues. We have to deal with them separately. So first things first, let's build, research, design, whatever we got to do. I know Bit360 is out there. Again, yeah. I'm not smart enough to understand any of it. Let's get the option for people to upgrade build first.
Yeah.
Ship that.
Well, that's happening. Like, Huns Beast is working on this. Totally. Like, that's, maybe it needs more eyeballs on it.
I think it needs more people just to understand what it is, how it works. So I think first things first, just get that done. Mm-hmm. Now, on the second topic of what do you do with old coins, if you solve that first bit, this is law of the jungle until proven otherwise. But at least you had people with an option, sort that out first. My personal view on the what do you do with the old coins, they come back to market.
So I totally agree.
I don't think, and the reason I want to go down that approach, there's two angles, and we had a big talk about this in at Cheat Code last year. There's the argument of, if someone's coins get stolen, the security assumptions of Bitcoin get broken. But then the other side is, if you freeze someone's coins, I think you taint the idea of Bitcoin, which is property rights. If someone has your private key, they legally don't own the coins, but they do own them, right? The possession is 9/10 of the law. If you leave your private key in a desk drawer and someone gets it, or someone uses quantum to extract them, you have kind of made the decision to not upgrade. So if we take Satoshi, for example, if we freeze his coins, we are doing so before Q Day, because otherwise they would have been stolen.
Mm-hmm.
If we freeze Satoshi's coins, we made that decision for him.
Yeah.
What if it was on a Monday and on a Tuesday he comes back from the dead, or he is Hal Finney and he's frozen, and he brings back Man in the Coma and he goes, whoa, quantum hasn't been invented, or it failed, and you buggers froze my coins. If we freeze other people's coins, irrespective of flag days and all of that, we made the decision to take someone else's coins.
Yes.
If, on the other hand, we build the system and allow people to migrate, which will take time and that's a whole process, Q Day comes along and they get taken, in that instance, they chose not to save their coins.
Yeah.
That's their decision, not our decision. Now, the one proposal, I think Hunter Beast talks about this, which I think is potentially worth thinking about, is a rate limiting approach.
Yeah, so he talks about only one transaction per block to be a non-quantum proof address.
Yes, and I think or of the legacy coins.
Yes.
And I think that his rationale there is a sound one, which is that if you look at the current performance of the chain, on average, it's less than one per block. So right now, the rate limiting wouldn't affect anyone on average.
Could you break down the rate limiting just for their play?
Yes. So the idea is that you could set a rule where the miners could only include, like, the legacy addresses, which are vulnerable to quantum.
Yep.
You could basically say that they're only allowed to include one of those spends per block. So quantum comes along, all the lost coins that were going to upgrade. The ones who don't, we presume they're lost and going to get stolen. Quantum shows up and they don't steal them all in one big chunk. They steal them one per block.
They have to drip feed them out.
Now, the other thing I think is also worth thinking about.
Just quickly on that, there's also an interesting dynamic where, say, quantum computers can steal coins from these old addresses. There's then a fee dynamic that goes into it where, say you have a UTXO that has 50 Bitcoin on it. you want to steal that as quickly as possible before someone who owns that Bitcoin upgrades.
Yeah.
So what do you put in as a fee to make sure you're the one transaction in the next block? And it might end up, instead of giving all those coins back to the market, just give them to the miners.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing. And I think that comes down to the next point, which is, who is going to invent this quantum computer? Because IBM invents it. What are they going to do? Steal Satoshi's coins? Like, what are you going to do? Launder it through Binance? Like, you're going to get a benevolent dictator, most likely. It's going to be Chinese or US government. It's going to be a high-flying tech company. And if you're unlucky, it'll be North Korea.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not going to be North Korea.
Exactly. So you got to think about, like, who is actually going to be the one to crack this quantum thing? What are they going to do? Start ripping into banks? Like, I don't think so. And again, it depends on access and all these types of things. Irrespective, I actually think all that stuff is kind of irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
The threat, if you run the human experiment long enough, we will eventually break elliptic curve cryptography because yeah. we're smart. Don't bet against innovation. I also don't want to bet against innovation by, you know, I certainly don't think Bitcoin's going to die. I think the coins come back to market. I think that's a separate conversation, and it's a mistake to cloud the tech with that decision. Separate the two, get the option for people to upgrade first, do the requisite work. If we as Bitcoiners solve that problem in the next 12 months, just what we're going to do, have the plan, what's the FUD?
Yeah.
What FUD is left?
On that point, though, I think there's a really short-sighted view on the sort of market impact of all these coins coming back to market, in that, like, to me, I agree with you totally. Bitcoin enshrines property rights. That's like one of the absolute fundamental things to me. So if we as Bitcoiners say we're going to freeze those funds so a bad actor down the road doesn't, then the property rights are broken.
Agree.
And so if that happens,
the idea of Bitcoin.
And if that happens, what should the price of Bitcoin be? And to me, it's far lower.
Agree.
So like, even though there might be short-term impact on the market if these coins do go to like bad actors, they dump them. Like, in the other scenario, Bitcoin doesn't have the same future value anyway. So it's actually a really short-sighted way of looking at it.
I would put it in the realm of reputations take forever to build and one bad tweet to destroy. And yeah. I think that's more or less the way I think about this. We've built such a tremendous thing with Bitcoin. It will take one mistake like that to affect. You can't undo that from the idea. You're actually hitting the idea of Bitcoin. And if you take that to its logical conclusion, I don't believe that the price is something we should care about when we do make consensus changes.
Yeah.
When we make consensus changes, that should be about the security and the decentralization and the properties that make Bitcoin worth something.
Yeah.
The market will then value that. If we start making decisions because we're afraid of the Satoshi's coins, which, by the way, Satoshi's coins come back to market, they're going to auction, and I don't know about you, but I'm going to buy some for sentimental value. It'd be, yeah, how, hectic. How many Bitcoiners are going to go buy a million stats of Satoshi's coins? Totally, let's go.
It's the ultimate ordinal.
I don't. Yeah, it's my rare set. I don't think, you know, I really just don't think that anyone's going to. Aren't the ordinals guys going to go nuts over that? There's your rare sats, right?
Yeah.
I think the idea is build the tech, have the option. Let's have the conversation now. I'm not smart enough to work it out, but I think more public discussion about this is going to be really healthy.
Yeah.
It's going to set up Bitcoin up for just a tremendous, tremendous road ahead.
If Bitcoin has freeze that, that's the equivalent of the US freezing Russian treasury.
Yes. I fully agree. Same framework.
If you freeze that, if you freeze Satoshi's coins on a potential that quantum is going to come out, there's older coins that are going to be aging as well. So do you start freezing more?
Well, it'll depend on the address format. But it would be a monumental mistake in my opinion.
And more importantly, I actually think from a pragmatic standpoint, I believe we can come to consensus on this. I think there's zero chance we ever come to consensus on this because immediately I'm not changing anything.
Yeah.
So for me, my node says no.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of people in that same camp, and there's a lot of people who want to freeze it because they don't want the market impact. We will never hit consensus on freezing the coins.
I'll take an airdrop.
Therefore, the base case for me is you spend time arguing over this, you're going to waste time. Let's focus on this.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm. This has been fun.
It's been really good.
Yeah,
really. In person, it's way better.
It's way better.
Yeah.
Well, I'll come down to Sydney whenever. Maybe we just refuse to do remote shows from now on.
I'll fly to Brisbane.
There you go. Done.
Hell yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate that. Oh, actually, before we close, Check on Chain. Tell everyone about it.
Yeah, mate. Send us off.
Oh, well, Check on Chain. So we run a newsletter on Substack, and we basically help hodlers navigate the volatility. That's kind of our major kind of selling point. We're basically your Bitcoin personal trainer. We have a big community now. We have a couple of chats. We also have Check on Chain Orange, which is for more institutional, larger investors. And we have a private Telegram there. A lot of insights are shared. And we generally just want to give people that data-driven approach to stay calm, stop looking at the price chart, stop looking at X and believing any narrative and that big anxiety that builds up when kind of crazy movements happen. Our job is to help guide you through that. So we work every day. We fucking love it. We talk about this 24/7. Yep. Come join us, come along with the ride, and it's going to be a fun next year, honestly.
My main motivator, I don't make price predictions, I don't make price calls. I just want people to have made their decisions, which is the only thing you can control, months before you need to use it. And if you make a decision, like let's say we got to 95K and we just bounced to all-time highs. Totally was a valid thing. If we didn't need our bear market decision framework for what am I going to do at 82, that's great. I'll put it in my back pocket and I'll use it when it happens. Now that we're at 82, I don't want any of my subscribers to ever feel like a deer in the headlights. Not because I can predict that it was going to happen, but because we just thought about that scenario as a possibility ahead of time. So prepared. That's it. You prepare yourself. Can't predict, just prepare for it.
I love it. It's one of the best newsletters in the space. I read everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, you guys are awesome.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for awesome too, man. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course.